Improve your network automation from one-off scripts only you can use to safe, robust automations you can share with your entire IT organization with Itential. Find out more at www.itential.com/packetpushers. That's www.itential.com/packetpushers. Welcome to Heavy Networking, coming to you from the Packet Pusher since 2010. My name is Ethan Banks. You can follow me on LinkedIn, where I'd be happy to connect with you. Our topic today is GraphQL. What is it? When would you use it? We'll describe GraphQL clients and servers and then apply it to the larger topic in question here, network automation. And our guest is Rick Donato. Rick's an independent creator with his own company focused on network automation training, Packet Coders. Rick, welcome back to Heavy Networking. And hey, man, before the show, we were talking, we're both going to AutoCon 1 in Amsterdam. That's the Network Automation Forums event. And you're speaking, you fancy guy. What are you speaking about?
I know, it's going to be a blast. So I'm speaking all about testing. So automated testing. And it's crazy because it doesn't sound a lot, but when you unpack it, yeah, there's a whole world to it, right? Pandora's box.
So you talk about network automation testing is what that topic's going to cover. So like generating tests so that when I'm going to, I don't know what, push a change into the network, I know whether everything's going to go okay?
Exactly. Like testing placement, testing scopes, testing tools, testing discovery, testing ideas, just all of that basically.
Well, awesome. All right. Well, I'm looking forward to meeting you in Amsterdam in person and hearing your talk on testing. But today, you and I are covering GraphQL. And I guess we need to start with an introduction what GraphQL is all about. But I think the way to set it up is to talk about REST APIs first, because with REST APIs, I can format a simple query in Python. I can use the request library to get that done. I'm going to get back a structured set of data. Those APIs are pretty well documented, generally speaking. Most of the vendors are really good about that. I know what to ask for via the API. I know what response I'm going to get back from the API. And that all sounds good. So where do REST APIs go wrong for us?
So the thing with REST APIs is that ultimately, if you want, because when you're working with data, you're going to want to get different bits of data. So in our networking world, we might want to get some device data, you know, platform data, et cetera, names, but then we might also want to get the interface data for these devices. And so when it comes to REST, you've got to go out to multiple different endpoints to get different resources to get the data back. And then you have to do some form of kind of client voodoo processing to then stitch that data together to be able to do something with it, in a nutshell.
Yeah. So in other words, to get... I need to know these five things. I might have to talk, as you said, API endpoints. I might have to do five different API queries to get all the points of data back that I want. Wouldn't it be nice if I could just ask one question and get back an answer that's got everything in it that I'm looking for?
Exactly. Wouldn't it be nice if I could just go out to one endpoint, tell it exactly what I want back, and you just get that blob of data back, and then you can just do with it whatever you need to do. And so that's the kind of the real high level to it.
In a nutshell, yeah, that is GraphQL. Someone asked the question back in the day, wouldn't it be nice? I guess as I was reading up on GraphQL, it was Facebook, the team at Meta, that began this whole GraphQL thing because they were trying to solve that problem. Lots of APIs. And I've run into this problem too, and not just with network automation stuff, but other APIs, just broadly speaking. I've worked with the audio content provider that our podcast network uses has an API, so we can see all kinds of things about episodes and statistics and data and so on. But I'll ask it, I need this one particular piece of data, and I got to ask it, run a query against a specific API that sends me back that one little bit of data and 1,000 other things I don't care about. So I get back this massive blob of data, and I only want the one thing. I want that one little field of JSON or whatever it is, which is annoying. And then to get the rest of it, I got to ask a bunch of other stuff and cobble it all together. Really annoying. But anyway, GraphQL solves this for us. So give us that high level, Rick. What's the structure of GraphQL? Does it look like an API? Does a provider have to give me GraphQL to support this? How does it work?
The best way to think about GraphQL, I mean, it is just it's a query language for APIs. And if you can just imagine that you've got this one endpoint that you go out to, like /GraphQL, and you literally just send over your query to it, and you send over so you do a post to the endpoint with your query, which is sent over as JSON. and then you just get the data back. So you're not doing anything crazy. There is no gRPC or anything crazy like that. It's you're still using the HTTP constructs just to send over a post of your query. But that's pretty much it. You construct your query as JSON, you send it over to that one endpoint, and you get your data back.
In the middle, though, so let's scope it within network automation. Does a Cisco switch have to support GraphQL before I can ask a GraphQL query?
Yeah, so I would say GraphQL is still quite new to the networking world. So it's mainly the modern sources of truth that have it at the moment, i.e. like Nortobot and Netbox. And I know there are other products coming out that are going to also support GraphQL. So it's kind of coming more and more de facto. But when it comes to the actual devices themselves, they still don't, from my knowledge at the moment, don't support GraphQL.
Yeah, and as I've been reading up on this, that's actually fine that they don't. It doesn't matter, because as long as I've got a GraphQL server of some kind sitting in front of the APIs I want to query, then I'm at liberty to build out any GraphQL queries that I want. I have to stand up a server that's going to stand in front of those APIs for me and do some server configuration. But then I can send GraphQL queries to the server. The server's got the GraphQL schema defined that's going to basically call on those APIs from those multiple endpoints and give me back the data that I'm looking for. And as long as I can stand up the GraphQL server, then we're good. Or, as you put it, the network sources of truth are starting to have this feature now. And I watched a webinar that you did on YouTube where the source of truth you were using was Netbox, and it's got a GraphQL server built in.
Exactly. And so when you go over to most of the platforms that have GraphQL running, and so, you know, be it sources of truth, another platform that you might also interact with from time to time is GitHub. So that has GraphQL. But whatever the system is, where you'd normally be using something like Swagger / OpenAPI to look at the documentation, etc., or use that like interactive form of documentation with REST APIs, you have GraphIQL with GraphQL based endpoints. And so you can go onto there, use that as a form of documentation, and it's going to tell you about all of the different, you know, methods, etc., that it supports, and also allow you to try it out to be able to kind of just, you know, build your query out and kind of get a feel for it. So
you say the GraphIQL server, methods that are supported and so on. Does that mean the schemas that are supported, like the basically another version of an API endpoint documentation like I would get back with Swagger?
Yeah, so you go onto Swagger and you can see like the different endpoints and the resources and the query parameters and all of that stuff. With the GraphIQL, you can go onto there and you can see the different operations, methods that are supported, different fields that you can use within those queries. Because ultimately, all you're doing is you're writing a query to be able to kind of interrogate and get back the data from a database. So it's going to show you all of the different things. The good thing about it is that it auto-populates. So it's quite easy to use and to navigate.
Okay. Well, before we get into like the Netbox way of doing it, maybe we can back up one step and say, if I was building this whole thing myself, and I know you and I were talking before the show, neither of us have actually gone in quite this deeply with GraphQL, but if we were to stand up a server, a GraphQL server, we'd be defining our own schema against a bunch of API endpoints and then providing that schema to a client. And then the client would then know what it could ask and what it could get back. Are you saying with Netbox and so on that that has been done for us? And so now I'm not defining a schema. It's all just there and self-documented.
Yeah. So kind of just to recap on what you said, it's kind of that what you do is you define these resolvers against your database to then create this schema that you can use via an API. So exactly for Netbox, they've already done this and they've already gone in, done all of the hard work. And so they expose basically, yeah, this schema, this endpoint that you can interrogate and get the data back from their database from. So they've done all of that for you. So you don't have to do any of the heavy lifting.
All right, so we've got GraphQL. We can kind of think of it as a middleman between us and APIs that allows us to selectively pick from multiple APIs and get back a data blob that's exactly what we're looking for. I've got a GraphQL client then if I'm writing in Python, I've got a GraphQL client. Would that be, is there a library if I'm writing Python code that I would be using for this?
Yeah, so ultimately, because you're just using HTTP, within the Python world, you could just use a library like requests. Mm. There is also a library called GQL, I believe, and that then allows you to leverage more of the native features of GraphQL. So, you know, we've just spoken about GraphQL and we've said, okay, well, it's great. You can send this query over to this endpoint and get the data back. But there's a few other things that you can do with GraphQL, which is worth mentioning. You have different operations. So in terms of the standard operation is a read-based operation, which is called a query. But to be able to do a write-based operation, that's called a mutation. There's other features to it as well. So you get things such as aliases. So you can reuse fields within your query. You can use variables. So you can then kind of parameterize some data and loop over your queries. You've got subscriptions, so asynchronous communication. Hmm. And you've also got fragments. So you can then create like reusable parts of your query and use them elsewhere. So you can kind of make a dry-based query, you know, like don't repeat yourself.
Interesting. So the query, like going back to what you're saying about I can have variables within my GraphQL query, I would think of that from a coding perspective. I wouldn't look to the query language to provide that for me. I would assume I'd be like writing that in Python and doing an iteration. You're saying I can have that functionality baked right into the query?
Yeah, exactly. So the way that I've used it before is that normally I don't need to use the variables because I can just use the language to do that for me. But from time to time, you might actually start tripping it over yourself for whatever reason. Like if you start to do something within Python and then you start to have to deal with like F strings and some backticks and stuff, and you think, oh man, this just is not working. You're like, okay, I can just leverage the variables and they work nicely. Hmm. And so it's just another way of doing it. It's a nice feature and that can help you get unstuck if you're definitely doing it directly within Python. So there's one more thing that I was just going to mention, and that's around the schema. So the schema that GraphQL uses is a native schema to GraphQL, which is called SDL, so schema definition language. And I say the full fat process of using GraphQL is actually that the client goes out to the endpoint and pulls down the complete schema that it presents. And so what the client can actually do is it can do a form of introspection against the query. So you can imagine a client's like, okay, well, I want to send this query over to GraphQL, but it can actually then go out, get the schema, pull it back, and then validate that its query is valid before it sends it over, which is quite nice. And that feature in itself is something that you can do when you use the GQL Python library. If you literally just want to send over a query and just do something quick, it can just use requests within Python. But if you want to use all of the, you know, all of those features, like doing that introspection, then you're going to want to look at something like the GQL.
Nice. The validation then could be useful if the GraphQL schema is changing from time to time and you want to check that the code I wrote 3 months ago is still valid against this. You could do it that like that.
Exactly. Because ultimately, pretty much all of the network automation, the core thing to it is data, right? If you can make sure the data's good, that bloodline's good, that blood flow, right? You're not going to be hitting as many issues. So yeah, you can just kind of fail early. So
a quick sponsor break courtesy of iTential. iTential is the network automation platform you get to build robust, self-service automation that is safe for your entire IT organization. Now, if you've been writing your own automation, I'm guessing you've run into this problem. You have a directory. It's got a bunch of Python scripts or Ansible playbooks in it, and
And yeah, they're way better than CLI copy-paste, but who besides you can safely use those scripts or run those playbooks? It's all a bit fragile, and that makes you irreplaceable, and that's not good. You want to be able to go on vacation or be sick or have dinner without getting a call, which means you need a network automation system that is not fragile, that anyone in your organization can use, and that leverages the automation work you've already done. And Itential gives you all of this. With Itential, you'll be able to run your scripts safely as a workflow that integrates with your change management, your IPAM, monitoring, your ticketing system, and anything else that you need. True network automation. Not something that just saves you some CLI time, but something that touches everything that needs updating and testing when you make a network change. And Itential is low code. You don't have to be a software developer to use it. Whether you're just getting started with network automation or you're deep down the rabbit hole with GitOps and pipelines, Itential can help. Automate from ticket creation to ticket closure with Itential. Find out more at www.itential.com/packetpushers. That's www.itential.com/packetpushers.
So I wanted to mention, I know we really want to focus on NetBox and Autobot and those sorts of, you know, GraphQL uses. That's going to be a lot easier for those of us in the network automation world. But since I did this digging around on GraphQL, Rick, I just wanted to point out some of the tooling that I found that's out there. Because there's a lot of it. There's plenty of different servers and libraries and so on. There's the open source Apollo GraphQL server. They looks like they got a freemium model that's out there. There's several different libraries related to Python. There's Graphene, Strawberry, and I'm Ariadne, A-R-I-A-D-N-E. I think that's how you pronounce it anyway. There are three different libraries that let you either build a GraphQL server, query a GraphQL server, or both. And they're well documented. They're all open source on some level. There's good documentation behind these. You mentioned GraphIQL earlier, Rick, and I noticed in the Strawberry documentation that GraphQL is like, yeah, when you stand up Strawberry, you've got GraphIQL right there. It's a server you can go in and do things. And it looked very much like the NetBox interface, the GraphIQL interface there. Maybe they're using the same library. I have no idea. Could be. So there's, if you want to do this, there are tutorials out there on how to stand up your own GraphQL server in Python if you wanted to play with it at that level. But I guess, Rick, to speak to our point, you don't have to. There's tools there within NetBox and so on that make that happen. So maybe we should go there next. Talk about the GraphQL functionality in NetBox.
Yeah, so I'm just going to... One thing I want to mention as well, just before we step into that, because there was the piece around the clients, and there's one kind of client that we've not mentioned yet, which is a lot of folks use it, which is Ansible. And so if you wanted to use this within Ansible, you would then just use the URI module just to, because you're just dealing with the HTTP, right? So,
okay.
And I mention that because I truly feel that one of the big benefits of using GraphQL is really to reduce your blood pressure when using Ansible. And I say that from experience because a few days ago, I've been down this rabbit hole. And so, yeah.
Well, and again, that goes to your point that although you might give up some of the unique functionality of GraphQL, if you're not using a GraphQL specific client, you can just talk to it like a REST API, as long as you can, you know, put that HTTP formatted request up there, it's going to work.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
All right, so let's move into the NetBox part of the conversation. We get some GraphQL functionality there. What do we get?
So out of the box, we get just the read. So it doesn't support mutations. So ultimately, working with GraphQL with NetBox, it's nice, right? Because we can now get this blob of data down for basically like two key use cases. One for building configuration, but then also for testing. So a really good use case for using GraphQL with NetBox is, say we've got some Jinja templates and we're rendering some configuration. We can literally just do one call out to NetBox, get all of the data we need to be able to fully populate a template and to render it. Whereas normally we would have had to have done, obviously, multiple different calls. So yeah, so that's the main thing. So, I mean, when it comes to NetBox, you can get all of that data back that you've got within NetBox, mm-hmm. back via GraphQL, yeah. So
yeah, Yeah, so I can be in Ansible using the URI module. I could be in Python using the request module, aim that specific request at NetBox and get back from... This isn't NetBox acting as a server that's querying live network devices. It's what's living inside of NetBox, the NetBox data repository itself that's giving you back information, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Now, is that well-documented, well-supported and all of that, or is it kind of a new thing?
It's been around for a while. It's good. I know, I think in the newer versions, they're adding some new, I believe they're looking at updating or changing the library, and it's definitely a, you know, it's a first-class citizen. It's supported, and yeah, I mean, it works well, and yeah, it's really, really useful. And I would really say it's so useful when you're using Ansible. And the reason I say this is because ultimately, when you're working with data, you're going to need to, you know, if you're working with a lot of data from REST, you're going to need to do things to it to, you know, loop over it or whatever. And when you're working with Ansible, obviously Ansible's quite got a heavy abstraction layer to it. It's great, but as soon as you want to do anything a little bit more complicated, especially with the data, it can get really, really, you know, painful. And GraphQL really does help with that. GraphQL really does simplify things when you're using a tool which adds that, you know, that additional abstraction shackles. So I think GraphQL is so useful when working with things such as Ansible, 100%.
Now, you mentioned a couple of use cases. You said configuration and testing. So walk us through an example. Like if we're talking about a configuration use case where GraphQL is going to come in really handy and maybe save me from pulling hair out, which is funny you say that because you and I are both fairly bald men, so I don't know how much hair we have left to pull up. Anyway, what would I do?
GraphQL.
Maybe. Walk us through a configuration use case with GraphQL. Can you come up with one?
Yeah, so let's say we've got our data for our devices. We've got interface data within NetBox. We've got the device data, like device name. We've got some custom fields, you know, domain name, etc. within NetBox as well. We've got some ASN data. So we've got all of that sitting within NetBox. We want to get all of that data down because we want to basically populate some templates, some Jinja. Some configuration using Jinja templating. So we can, you know, use something like Ansible or Nornir. I say Ansible because I know, you know, a lot of folks use that tool. And so with Ansible, we can go out to GraphQL. We can pull down all of that data using a single query. So all the interface data, everything within one payload. And then we can just get that down for one device. And then we can just pass that to another task to then place that into a template and to do the rendering and literally just, yeah, render the configurations down just based on a couple of tasks. Now you can pull down with the NetBox GraphQL, you can, if you want, pull down all of the data for all of the devices, but it's quite nice to be able to kind of filter that down and limit that down and loop over the inventory hosts to be able to kind of render that configuration.
We're talking about efficiency here is what I think I'm hearing. It just feels more, there's less cruft to deal with. There's less wasted cycles processing data that we don't need. This all just feels tidier.
Exactly. And it's quicker, you get less waste because you're not getting stuff that you don't want. And also as soon as you get into the details of using REST, you start to realize, oh man, to craft a query, it can be quite painful, i.e. you get query parameters. You know, as you're building out, you've got all the different query parameters, you've got the different payloads that you might need to create, all of those different things you need to craft, whereas you can kind of just scrap all of that and you've just got this nice single query. So it's funny because GraphQL, I think when people first hear it, it's like, whoa, that sounds a bit futuristic and it sounds really complicated. But actually, as you go through and you learn it more, it's actually a million times simpler and easier than just using REST. So,
well, it is on the consumer side. I mean, if you got to build out a GraphQL server yourself and stand up a schema and all that, I think there's some complexity there. But if you're the one who's consuming it, you're just sending that query to the GraphQL server, life is definitely better.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
All right, so you walked us through a configuration use case. You said testing was another one. Let's describe that.
Let's say you are... You know, you need to do some testing. You need to test some ASN, some against some devices. You can just let's say you want to do a test some BGP, you want to test some interface MTUs. So you can just go out to your source of truth, put all of that expected state down using just a limited set of queries, get that into your testing framework, whatever it might be, and then run through your tests. So an example of this might be, you might be running something like PyATS. So that's a testing framework by Cisco, and you're going out to the devices, you're pulling back the interface data, et cetera. And then you need to go through and you need to kind of marry that up and do your assert statements and write your tests against an expected state. And so using something like GraphQL makes that really easy as well, because it just limits the amount of calls and those payloads and everything you have to send over. So
interesting. Okay. So in that scenario, that specific scenario, we can't use NetBox in that case, or could we? Because like you were describing testing with PyATS, I mean, we need to be testing against live network data at that point. So would I need a GraphQL server of my own in the middle in that case?
That would be the ideal. I mean, that would be a nirvana, really. Mm. With the current state of where things are at the moment, you'd go out to NetBox, your source of truth, pull down the expected state, go out to the network, pull in the current state, and then compare the two. Now, what you're speaking about, I think, is a common conversation a lot of people are having at the moment. And not to kind of go too further afield, but the whole notion of being able to get your intended state and the current state in the same schema, the same modeled format, to be able to easily compare, that in itself is where things are going to get interesting. Because as soon as you get that and you get both of those states in the same schema, it makes it massively easier to test. And you're going to be able to create thousands of tests, test the network very, very quickly. And I think that's what we're going to see definitely within the next 12 months, more of that coming out. But yeah, I'm probably going off slight tangent.
No, it's an interesting point though, because if the point of your testing is to validate that what you just pushed into the live network is in fact what you got, that your actual state post-change matches intended state, we need an easy way to query the live network, the live multi-vendor network, as the case may be, and so on, which also goes back to the complexity of this problem. If you're dealing with a multi-vendor network and not everybody's data models are the same. And I think also speaks to some of the guys I know in this space who are building out their own models for their own environment, for their own services that they're standing up within their organizations, having to go that route with their modeling, that is writing their own. So it is not a, it's not an easy problem to solve, but I get where you're going. I mean, if we are using GraphQL for testing, we, even testing against NetBox, you know, with intended state, you can still do a certain kinds of validation.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. Yeah. Now, GraphQL is great, but there is a slight disadvantage of it, because to be able to allow you to write these queries to be able to get exactly the data that you want back, they're quite nested. So I want to get some interface data back, but off the interface object, let's say I want to get the IP address, and then off of that you might need to get the ID or et cetera, et cetera. So you kind of get this nested payload, and that results in the data you get back can be slightly nested as well. So, you know, the data has multiple layers, and then that is one thing. And then you have to kind of then...
Well, you talk about the pain in the rear end of digging into the nested layers and to refer to the specific object that you're trying to pull out, whether you're writing code and trying to dig in there or whatever. Referring to the object you want when it's nested is annoying.
Exactly, yeah. Because ultimately, when you're working with the data, you want it as flat as possible, so you don't have to walk down the data, you know. So it's one of those things, always really hard to explain on a podcast without any visuals. But yeah, exactly, like you're saying.
No, I was writing a very basic Python blog post a while back about how to refer to data. Nested data came up, but it just gets arcane. It's really dealing with a nested dictionary or a nested list or something. It's or it's a dictionary of lists or whatever it might be. Then it there's just a certain amount of arcanity to it, like anything in coding. So I agree with you. Yeah, flat is great if you can get flat. That's pretty wonderful. So Rick, we've been talking about GraphQL with in the context of NetBox is a common tool a lot of folks are using, and it gives us a GraphQL endpoint. And there's also the GraphIQL server that's in there. And I think it's worth mentioning because you spent quite a bit of time on this in the YouTube video I was mentioning earlier when you were doing the webinar on this topic, that you can build queries and get results back right from the web interface. No code required, right?
Yeah, exactly. So one, you can put your queries in and get the data back from the endpoint directly within the browser, but also it allows you to leverage, you know, the different features, i.e. you can use the GraphQL query variables, so you can use that. But also, probably the most importantly, is it gives you all of the documentation. So side by side with writing the query, so as you're writing the query, it populates itself, so you can then auto-populate so you can see what's available. But then on top of that, you've got the documentation, so you can see all of the different objects and you can step down. Because as I was mentioning before, you've got that nested layout of stepping through the basically the database schema. As you step through that, you can see that within the documentation, and it gives you the arguments and all of the different things to be able to build queries. So it's nice. It's really nice.
Well, so that would be a way for you to ease into things if you're new to GraphQL and wanted to play with it. It's right there in NetBox. You don't even have to be writing Python code to access this or to get data back this way. You can use that that web interface to get a feel for it and how it would work for you. Warwick, thanks for this overview of GraphQL. I know you spent some time working on it in the network automation world, and thank you for the work that you do. And your company is Packet Coders. Review for us what that is again.
Yep. So Packet Coders, it's an online training platform all about network automation. So our goal is to, and our mission is to make learning network automation as easy as possible. So we've got courses, we've got a membership, you know, blogs, a whole ton of different things. And we're actually just about to release, by the time this is published, it would be announced, but we've got a series of tools to help people learn network automation as well, like free tools. So like a Jinja renderer and all things, you know, to just to help folks learn all of the different things of network automation. And the big thing we have got is we've got a network automation with Python bootcamp, which is now on demand. So we give you, you know, 200 videos, a dedicated spine and leaf network, support over a period, like a 3-month period, where you can learn not just all of the different tools, but how to integrate them. So a lot of what we spoke about today, like how to leverage GraphQL with Ansible and Jinja and NetBox and PyATS and how to stitch all of these different tools together. So, you know, we've got that all within the Packet Coders website that you can get to via packetcoders.io.
Packetcoders.io. Okay. Rick is an independent creator like I am, and many folks are on the Packet Pushers podcast network, and we love to showcase what people are doing like that. So not everything Rick has to offer is free. This is how Rick feeds his family, is with his work at Packet Coders. So go over there and see what's interesting and support him. And Rick, again, is going to be at AutoCon 1, the Network Automation Forum event in Amsterdam at the end of May, coming up the end of this month, if you're listening to this show when it was released. And I'm going to be there as well. So end of May 2024, you can meet both Rick and I in Amsterdam at AutoCon 1. Go to networkautomation.forum if you want to register for that event, and maybe we'll see you there. So thanks again, Rick, for sharing your knowledge of GraphQL. And we've got a lot more from the Packet Pushers for you. If you love network automation, you can check out the Network Automation Nerds podcast with Eric Chow. Eric's show has been around for a long time, but he's brought Network Automation Nerds to the Packet Pushers, and we are very glad to have him aboard. We got some other new shows too, including a security show called Packet Protector. You see what we did there, Packet Protector? It's a pun. I'm not going to explain it. Okay, Packet Protector with speaker, author, and consultant JJ Manella, along with Packet Pusher's very own Drew Conry Murray. We have several more podcasts, the lineup including Network Break, Day 2 Cloud, Heavy Strategy, and Heavy Wireless, and more. And to my vendor friends, all of these shows, along with this one, are available for sponsorships. The inventory backlog we once had during the pandemic, because some of you were coming to us going, we can't get on your show for months. Now, that's all loosened up now. We are very ready for you to work with us. Come on by packetpushers.net/sponsors and fill out that form. We'd love to hear from you. You can connect with me, Ethan Banks, on LinkedIn or in the Packet Pushers community Slack channel. Happy to chat with you or to read your follow-up message via the form at packetpushers.net/FU. Last but not least, remember that too much networking would never be enough.